You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We are the voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of anyone at KDUX, Richland College, or the DCCD. As predicted on my last show, the Senate passed the debt ceiling, the so-called clean debt ceiling. All the Democrats voted for it, and all the Republicans voted against it. No surprise there. The vote was 55 Democrats for raising the debt ceiling, and that will take us through March of 2015. I'm trying to dig out what the estimated debt ceiling is. I haven't been able to get that number. My guess is it's over $18 trillion. We're currently just under $17.4 trillion. So the deficit for this current fiscal year, 2014, is probably going to be somewhere between $500 billion on the low side and $600 to $700 billion on the high side. So if you add that to where we're currently at, you know, that would take us right around $18 trillion. So we've added almost, in the last 12 years under both Republicans and Democrats, we'll be adding nearly $10 trillion to the debt. And that means your children and your grandchildren, as well as people living today, are going to have to pay the interest on that and eventually pay the principal as well. The problem, ladies and gentlemen, we have a government that's really just too big. There's no easy way to put it, because we cannot continue doing this, because ultimately it leads to a default, or really what it leads to is a bankrupt government where we can't pay the bills. Because I've looked at the projections, I was doing a little research, and why there is a certain flattening out of the projected deficits for both 2014, 15, and 16, then it starts rising again, and by 2020, it's over $1 trillion again. So we have to have fundamental changes in government, and that means reforms in both entitlement programs such as Social Security and Medicare, as well as welfare programs such as Medicaid, food stamps, the Earned Income Tax Credit, Supplemental Security Income are some of the biggies, and I've covered that in past shows. The problem is the word is unsustainable. It obviously is unsustainable, and we're talking just the debt ceiling. You always need to remember that's just the tip of the iceberg, because the problem is so-called unfunded liabilities. In other words, the government has made promises to the American people that it frankly can't keep. And estimates, there's a broad range of estimates, but we have unfunded liabilities of over $100, not billion, not million, trillion dollars. You can see that's many times the current debt ceiling, and I'm giving you the gross debt. Some of that is interagency debt. Roughly about $5 trillion of the current debt is interagency. That's where, for example, and it's usually the big one, is where Social Security in the past has run surpluses. And what the U.S. Treasury does is it borrows that money, writes an IOU to the Social Security Trust Fund, and spends the money. That's still a liability. That has to be paid back. And so the net debt is around roughly $13 trillion and growing. Actually, it's a little under $13 trillion, but by the time this debt ceiling runs out, the net debt will be over $13 trillion, and the gross debt will be over $18 trillion. I'm not trying to get you confused with the numbers. I'm just trying to... We're in a world of hurts, because when you have to borrow 35 cents on the dollar for every dollar you're spending... Put it in your own life. It's like constantly living on a credit card and initially upping the limit on the card and then getting multiple cards. And you can't live on spending so much money that a third of it, more than a third, has to be financed. Now, yes, as the economy improves, the deficit, and don't confuse the two. A lot of people have trouble getting the distinction, and some people actually mix it up. I've heard people on the radio do that. It drives me nuts. Deficits are budgetary deficits for a particular year. Now, they do have monthly statistics as to what the deficits are, and they, you go to the U.S. Treasury Department's MTS report, and you can get a monthly report. For example, the eighth business day, and we passed that, the January report came out, and the eighth business day in March, the February report will come out, and it's running for the first 4 months of this fiscal year. Remember, the fiscal year starts 1 October, so we've had October, November, December, January. For those 4 months total, the deficit is 184. So if you multiply that by 3, you could see where we're going to be over $550 billion. I think it's going to be over $600 billion, but who knows? It depends on the tax collections. And the point is this: if the economy is doing well and growing, in other words, you get more tax revenues because more people are working. So that means you get more personal income taxes, more corporate income taxes, more payroll taxes, as well as more excise taxes. Those are the big ones, the four big ones, and it's really the first three that are the largest. So it obviously makes sense if the economy is growing at 3, 4, 5%, the government's revenues, tax revenues, increase, and that is really bringing down the deficit. It's not that they've dramatically cut spending, because they have cut spending a little bit, but the real driver that's improving the amount of the deficit, for the annual deficit, is the fact we're collecting more revenue. But after a period of a year, you'll have what the deficit would be, for example, in fiscal year 2014, whatever that number is. Over that year, what has happened is the Treasury has to issue securities. And that's why we've had all this debate this week and discussions in the news and these votes to raise the debt ceiling. We're one of only two countries, the other country being Denmark, but really most countries do not have a debt ceiling. And there are historical reasons for that. I don't really think it makes much sense for this reason. There are two things going on. First, a bill has to be passed in Congress, both by the House and Senate. That's step one. So the House and Senate have to have identical language in the bill for it to pass both the House and the Senate. You need a joint resolution. You usually have a conference committee to work out the language. Once it is worked out, then it's voted upon, and the bill is sent to the president for a signature. Well, that's the law of the legislation. But the second step is appropriations for that. And at any Congress, future Congress, can say, well, that's great, but we're not going to fund it. And that includes Obamacare. So just because a law is passed doesn't mean Congress has to fund it. Now, usually they do, but not necessarily. So what's going to have to happen is you're going to need major reforms in both welfare and entitlement programs, as well as cuts in other departments, because the American people are not going to say, okay, we understand you're cutting my Social Security, my Medicare, my Medicaid, my earned income tax credit, but the immediate question is, what are you cutting? What has the bureaucracy in Washington been cut? So really, all federal departments are going to have to take a budgetary hit, a major hit. Now, as far as I'm concerned, you could shut down 8 of these departments, and most people would not miss them. Now, I grant you, there are certain functions that these departments do. It's usually in the data statistics area that could be consolidated under one office, like the Office of Management and Budget, to put out and collect, analyze, and put out government statistics that is valuable. But the other parts of those departments, frankly, should be shut down. Now, I'm not going to spend time on that, but I'm leading up to something. Just a couple of weeks ago, the Gallup poll came out, and the headline news was that there was a record high of Americans identifying themselves as independents. The number went over 40%. It's now at 42%. Now, what's happened is the Democrats in the last couple of years have had a decline in the number of people identifying themselves as Democrats. It was as high as 36%, but it's now down to 31%. That's a dramatic decline. And it's not just the Democratic Party that has been losing. Republicans have always had less registered or affiliated people, but they were up over 30%. 33%, and now they're down to 25%. Well, you can do the numbers. The majority of Americans today are independent, and I don't think we've seen that number is going to climb. I know it's a mid-year election, and usually between presidential elections, there is a more people tend to get discouraged and disgruntled about the party that they're affiliated with and say, I'm not going to vote for them anymore because they're not representing what I stand for and what I want. And we're seeing that both parties are dramatically losing their bases. Now, they don't see it that way. They say, okay, they're more and more independents, but where do they have to go? They have no place to go. They either vote for us or if they don't vote, they're going to let the other party win. And that's the standard line. And you'll hear it from talk show hosts, politicians all the time. The problem with the third party is it's tremendously expensive to get on the ballot. And it's not just in one district or one state election. You really need to get on the ballot across the country. You see, what I see happening is this, and I really don't see any reversal anytime soon, is the number of independents is going to grow. And I think it will be over 50% within the next 10 years, if not sooner. I'm being a little pessimistic saying 10 years. I think it could happen in 4 to 6 years. I don't think it's going to happen overnight. This is a gradual process, but it will happen. You know, just for example, I'm looking at the chart right now. In 2008, you know, the first time Obama was running, the number of independents was right around 36%. And that was about the number of Democrats. At that time, Republicans were approximately, I'm ballparking it here, about 28%. You see what's happened? Both the Democrats and the Republicans have lost, and in just 6 years, the percentage has gone up roughly 1% a year. So it'll probably take 6 to 8 years minimum to get to 50. And then what do I think is going to happen? I think at 50, I really think is the red lights will be flashing or should be flashing, especially in both the Republican and Democratic Party, because once it gets over 50, it becomes more and more viable for people that really have money that are also disgusted, that also consider themselves independents, to what? Form another third party. And that's what always gets poo-pooed. You know, you have no place to go. Are you telling me if you're a conservative or libertarian, you know, and fill in the candidate, you're going to vote for the opposition? And I understand their point. I'll never vote Democratic Party. They are so far to the left of where I am politically. There is absolutely no chance that they would ever get my vote. Now, here's where I think the Republicans, well, I know the Republicans and really Democrats are making the mistake. And there are people that were former Democrats that have, it kind of flips, but on the same page. That they're really tired of the Democratic Party really not standing up for what they believe. So while they'll probably never vote Republican, they can stay home too. And see, that's what's going on. That's the dynamic right now. And both parties understand that. Well, if you stay home, fine. You see, the Democratic Party right now would welcome a third party. And their view is, well, that means less Republican votes. Well, not necessarily. There are a lot of Democrats that are independents now that if you had a strong third party that supported positions that they would approve of, would probably go to the third party. Let me give you an easy example. Taxes. And it's really pocketbook issues. And if the third party focused like a laser beam on pocketbook issues, I think it could win. And here's why. The American people understand that the federal government is broke. You can't run. They understand that if as an individual can't do what the government's doing. You know, they got to pay their bills. They can't keep running up debts. And even individuals, yeah, they can declare bankruptcy, but that's not really a good thing to do. There are some consequences of doing that. So they're just as disgusted with the Republicans former Republicans are disgusted with the Republican Party because they've been talking about balancing the budget for years, every year. And yet when they get in power where they control the House, the Senate, and the President, do they balance the budget? Absolutely not. There's always an excuse. Always an excuse. And the big one is war. Well, we got to go to war. We do. Did we have to go to war in Iraq? Did we have to go to war in Libya? You see, defense spending is also out of control. Now, I know it's been cut back, but one of the drivers, and it's not the only driver by far, but one of the drivers is the fact that the United States has a foreign policy that's strongly biased towards intervention abroad. Now, it used to be called empires. I have no problem with that. Now, the people that really want an active, aggressive U.S. government abroad don't like that term. I understand they're, you can't call me an imperialist. But what is it? To me, it doesn't matter whether, well, it matters in terms of what's happening. But I view status, you have two broad categories of status. You have those that really want to interfere and intervene in the U.S. economy. And those are, if you want to put a label on it, progressive. I like the term. They're big interventionist government statists. But you also have, in terms of the Republican Party, especially the neocons, but they're not the only ones. And I consider them progressives. There are former Democrats that I can kid them as their boat people. They came that when McGovern took over the Democratic Party, many Democrats, so-called Scoop Jackson Democrats, somewhat dated, but what happened is they need to find a home, and the home they found was in the Republican Party, and many of them are called today neocons or neoconservatives. I don't consider them conservatives. I don't consider them new at all. They want intervention abroad. They want nation building. They want us to build democracies in foreign lands. It never works out. What are they doing in Iraq and Afghanistan today? They're killing each other. And if we're there, they're killing us. Stay home. Do what George Washington, don't interfere abroad. Try to stay out as many wars as you can, and the United States and the American people would be much better. Because the people in the Middle East and Iran, as well as in Asia, have been killing each other from time immemorial. So why go there? To get killed? To spend a lot of money and get your sons and daughters killed? And I know you need to respond to when you're attacked. I have no problem with that. But that is really not what was done. Initially it was. When it failed, what did they do? They invaded Iraq. Thank you, Dick Cheney, the neoconservatives, and President George W. Bush. They have been biting at the bit to do that for years. And what happened? A lot of Americans got killed, but many, many times more Iraqis, innocent Iraqis, got killed. And yes, Saddam Hussein was a terrible person. I'm glad it's overthrown, but that's not the point. You know, if we wanted to, we could be in half a dozen countries today and make the case. Very few other countries would support us, but we could do it. We have the, in the past we've had the money. Now we can't. Our armed forces are stretched real thin. You have many people, reservists, that are on their third, fourth, fifth, sixth tours abroad. They're worn out. They are worn out. And there's a damage when you're day after day, you're seeing your friends either dying or being severely wounded. And this is the second and third time. And the people there really don't appreciate you. They consider yourselves invaders. Ugly Americans used to be the term. I say get out. And the majority of people, that's where they're at. Now, they would call me an isolationist. But the neoconservatives, what fundamentally they are, they're warmongers. They want more wars. And they can always give a pretext for doing it. There's always a story as to why we should be there. And I always say, if you really feel that strong about it, get on a plane and go there and organize the natives and overthrow the government. They don't do that. It's very comfortable in Washington, D.C., or in a talk show host on a radio show to pontificate about that. You notice it's never them that goes. Occasionally, one of their sons or daughters might enlist in the Marines or the Army and the Air Force, and occasionally they will actually go to war. But rarely do they get killed or wounded. But they want your sons and daughters to go over there, and they want money from Oz to support that. Well, those days are numbered, not when we're running these massive deficits. So eventually what's going to happen is the Defense Department budget is going to be radically cut. The troops will be brought home. Many bases will be closed. And we have several hundred abroad. Admittedly, some are small, but they're going to be closed down. And the primary reason is money. You don't have the money. You see, everything is connected. And my frustration with the news today, if you listen to the news, what is the number one story today? It's the weather. It's snowing. And in many places, you have ice covering the roads. People can't get to work. Trucks can't get through to restock grocery stores. So weather, for this entire week, has been the number one story. And I'll give a credit to Drudge. He had an intriguing headline, and he does write very good headlines. 49 states have snow. Now, a trivial question is, well, which state doesn't have snow? I'll give you a hint. It's in the continental U.S. See, Hawaii has some fairly high volcanoes, and there's some snow at the tops of those volcanoes. But what's the one state that doesn't have snow? Florida. Now, the question is it cold enough there to do damage to oranges? I haven't been following it. And if you notice, this is the first time I've mentioned the weather all week. Weather is something you have to adapt to. If the roads are frozen and the snow is piled up, what should you do? You should stay home. That's the rational response. And wait till the weather clears up. Wait till it gets warmer and wait until your city or state or county clears the roads and they're passable. You see, the problem is there's really very little you can do, and I would say nothing, about the weather. You can do something about being prepared for this weather. If you're an individual or family, make sure your pantry is stocked up with adequate food that can last a week or two. And if you have the money, have the ability to get off the grid, either with a generator or, if you can afford it, solar panels with batteries. Because what also has happened, besides the weather making it very difficult to travel, is the fact that you've had power outages in several states, including Pennsylvania and Georgia. You see, the problem is many of the New England states, I'm originally from New York and the New Jersey area. Well, I'm used to snow. Growing up as a kid, I had to snow the sidewalks and the driveway, and usually we had a foot or two or three. We didn't measure it in inches. We measured it in how many feet. And, yeah, we were happy that school was canceled. But it also meant that once the snow stopped, we would get out, me and my brother, and have to clean off the sidewalks in front of the house, as well as the walkway and the steps to the front door. And after that, we'd have to clean the driveway out and then the stoop. And that was just the drill. That was the procedure. Because usually my father would be home on the weekends, but many times he was not there during the week. So that was our responsibility. And given the fact we weren't in school, we thought it was a great trade-off. Because after we had cleaned off the driveway and the sidewalks, we took our sleds and slid down hills. And that can be very dangerous. And that's all I'll say about it. One day, I'll say a little bit. One day I went down one of the steep parts of this hill, and I almost busted my head at a tree. Fortunately, I was far back on the sled, so when the tree literally stopped my sled cold, my head actually went forward, but fortunately I was far enough back that my head didn't hit the tree. If I had had my head in front of the sled, which is not necessarily a good idea, I might not be here today, because it was a sudden stop and it scared you know what out of me. I took my sled home after that, because people do get injured. Now, I never went ice skating, but we had lakes that would freeze and kids would go ice skating, and occasionally someone would fall in, and rarely, but sometimes people would die because of that. But snow was normal. That's weather, and if it's winter, I expected snow, and so does most of New England, New York, New Jersey, along the eastern coast. Now, where you don't expect snow is the deep south, including Georgia, Florida, that area, and they've been hard hit. It's really along the eastern coast where you have a lot, well, the moisture from the ocean, the Atlantic Ocean, to the extent you have a cold front going over that, it can literally dump it. Because I was on Long Island, and we would get hit with a lot of snow. But it happens in Ohio. I was stationed I live right near Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. And it didn't happen all the time, but we would get at least one, two, or three major dumps of snow. Some really, and I can remember a couple of years, it was several feet in Ohio, and that's sort of in the central part of the country. But snow, for many people, is a common occurrence. And what usually people do, they still do it today. I've been living in Dallas, but cars in where you get a lot of snow would have to put chains on. They didn't have snow tires, but you could put chains on your tires. They were kind of a pain to get on, somewhat of a hassle, but that's one thing that people would do if they really had to get to work or go to school. Today you can get snow tires, but the problem there is you need to change them, and that's what people do. So you adapt to the situation. However, what's unique is the fact that most of the country, at least in some parts of the state, have snow. It's usually the higher regions, you know, your ski resorts in the mountains, obviously. That said, they're still warm. Tomorrow, Dallas will be in the high 60s, and it's comfortable today. It's not warm, it's not cold, but it's, you know, in between. But just a week ago it was bitter cold, and the joke in Texas is if you don't like the weather, just stick around, it'll change. So weather has been the number one story in the United States this week, and there have been many stories about it, including people being upset when they go to the grocery store and it's empty. Guess what? The logistics in the United States rely on both rail, but primarily trucks, to get goods from their warehouses to their various grocery stores. Well, it's not just groceries, but the critical one is groceries for most people. And when the roads are iced over, things back up. Flights are canceled. Even though Dallas was relatively okay, many flights were canceled because many of those flights were going to where the snow has been piling up. So they canceled them, which they should. No point going to Atlanta if Georgia roads are iced and you can't get anywhere. But that's what the American people are doing. Some people are relearning. You got to make certain adjustments. You got to plan ahead. You got to make sure you have the necessities that you need, including water, food, beverages. And just this, not this week, but a couple of months ago, I think it was January, December. Maybe it was December, I forget. I've had my electricity go out in the past, but it's usually for an hour or two, maybe three or four. Well, the electricity went out for over 12 hours. It eventually got turned on, and it wasn't just my apartment. It was a whole area of Dallas was out, and guess what? It kind of got cold. I just put on clothes and kept under the covers. The problem is there's no lighting. I had food in the freezer that I was concerned about. I didn't want to lose all that food that I had. But fortunately, it lasted, my estimate is, because I'm not exactly sure when it went out, but I'm fairly close. I lost electricity for about 12 hours. And then it got turned on. I said, thank you, thank you. And that was happening across Texas, across Dallas, across Texas. So weather is the story. I can't do anything about it. Grin and bear it. This too will pass. But getting back to where I'm really going today, and I'm going to have to cut this. We've had another change of schedule. We have another gentleman that we've really flipped the hours, and I'll really announce it Monday. I was having on Tuesday and Thursday a three-hour time slot. That will be switched to 4 o'clock, and that will make me happy and him happy. So today was the first time we did that. That's why I did start a little late, and I was scratching my head. What am I going to talk about? Because there wasn't many stories to talk about. But there's one, and it has to do with the independents and the fact that they're growing. Right now, the independents, they're not ignored, because both parties know if they're to win elections, they have to go after the independents. The problem they're having is attracting those independents back to vote for them. Now, they always like to say, well, I'm an independent, the way they characterize independents. Well, he's an independent, but he's leaning Republican. Or he's an independent, but he leans Democratic. Well, I'm an independent, and if the candidate and I look at their records, it's more what they do as opposed to say. I'll stay home just because it's a Republican. And like I said, I won't vote for a Democrat. But just because a Republican is running, is on the ballot, doesn't mean I'm going to vote for him. Far from it. I'm getting a kick, and it was becoming a little bit annoying. John Cornyn, the senior senator from Texas, also the Senate Majority Whip, has been running has a massive ad campaign on radio, television, and on YouTube. I don't watch television, but he's on YouTube. I can't. Now they're off, but he was running it. I think he's running scared because he's had a number of votes that, quite frankly, the Tea Party movement's not happy with. Libertarians aren't happy with, and quite frankly, conservatives aren't happy with. And yesterday, the Senate voted 55 to 43. 55 Democrats voted yay, 43 Republicans voted nay or against raising the debt ceiling. But prior to that vote, Senator Cruz set in motion the fact that you would need, instead of just a simple majority over 50, you would need 60 or more votes. And what happened is many Republicans, to close off debate, voted with the Democrats, including Senator Mitch McConnell, the majority leader, as well as the majority Senate Majority Whip John Cronin. I believe the vote was 67 to 30, 30 or 31. In other words, the Democrats needed five Republicans to vote with, and they got many more Republicans because what happened is the Republican leadership said, we want to get out of town because of the weather, so we're going to go. There are other reasons. They were upset at Ted Cruz. I'm cheering Ted Cruz. I would have, and he was successful. He forced out Republicans to take a stand, and I think it could cost. Let me be realistic. Do I think the Senate Majority Leader or Senate Whip are going to lose their seats? Probably not. But am I motivated? Now, I'm not in Kentucky, so I can't vote for the gentleman, but I am in Texas. I'm not crazy about Senator Cornyn. I know he is a conservative. And it's not a case where you have to agree with me 100% of the time or I'm not going to vote for you. I'm looking for leadership, both in the Senate and in the House, from the Republicans that are going to balance the budget, and I don't see it. And see, my worst fear is that come November, my fear is not that the Republicans won't win. I think the Republicans will probably keep the House and most likely take control of the Senate. I'm more and more disinclined to believe that they won't get to 60. But they'll probably get 51, 52, 53. The reason why I don't think they'll get any more than that is you have votes like this, and only if you follow it closely or you're aware what happened. You see, what the Republican Party wanted was to Cruz not to do what he did. Let me rephrase that. What the Republican establishment leadership of the party wanted was just a straight majority, 50 or more, where they didn't have to vote for cloture, stopping debate, limiting debate. Well, that didn't happen. So we ended up with a 55-43 vote along party lines, but it was academic. I mean, that's what I thought the conclusion was going to be. The problem is we're not anywhere close to balancing the budget. And even if the Republicans take the House and Senate in 2014 and take the president and presidency in 2016, I think they're going to do exactly what happened under Bush. They're going to go the way of the Democratic Party, and they're going to go on another spending binge, and the budget will never be balanced. Now, if they do that, and I think it's more than 50-50, I think it's more like 60-40 they could do that. Depends who the president is, and that will be a key point. But he has to work with the Republicans in both the House and the Senate. So depending on who the Republican nominee is, if it's another Romney, McCain, Dole type, call them moderate Republicans, Rhino Republican in name only, centrist, really left of center, another big, in other words, big interventionist government status, I don't see much change. And I don't see the balancing the budget anytime soon. So I was not too happy with what happened yesterday. I'm totally not surprised. And it's The only thing I was disappointed in, they're blaming Ted Cruz for forcing them to vote on this cloture. You see, if it were 60 votes instead, I think it was 67 was the, a number of Republicans voted for this, at least a dozen, and most of them were in the leadership. But if only five did, okay, that is acceptable. But when the leadership does, that is unacceptable. And they might have risked their primary. We'll see. I'm not very optimistic about that because if you're an incumbent, usually you have more than a 95% chance of being reelected. You usually have, and they both do have a lot of money. They have the organization. They have the message. But I think it's going to be a fairly tight race. Could be wrong. Who knows? And some will say, well, but these are conservatives. Well, they talk a good game. They talk conservative. But on the votes that count, they don't seem to walk the walk. I mean, that's the impression I'm getting. You know, the joke, you know, the John Cornyn has an ad. I have guns. You have guns. And I came up with the tagline of that. And all God's children have guns, too. He's going after the gun vote. And I'm all for supporting the Second Amendment. I'm against gun grabbers, gun registration, background checks. But that's sort of the minimum. I would hope you're a big advocate of the Second Amendment and the right of individuals to own and use their guns. But that's a minimum. That's every Republican or and really Democrat should be for that. If you believe in the Constitution and if you honor your oath of office. The senior senator for Texas has been running. They've been off YouTube recently. I don't know about television. They're still on the radio. I have been hearing ads still on the radio and getting, they get tiresome. See, that's one of the problems. They repeat it, repeat it, repeat it. And at some point, it and I will say this, the ads are very, very, very effective. My hat's off to them there. I think they're effective. However, they're becoming a little annoying because of the sheer repetition. But that's the name of advertising. Repetition, repetition, repetition. You know, there's the old adage in real estate, what's the key? Location, location, location. What's the key in successful advertising? Repetition, repetition, repetition. Well, when you have the money, and apparently our senior senator does, he's really been buying those airtime spots and running the ads, and the ads are very, very well done. Great ads. But he still needs to be worried. I know he's running scared. He wouldn't be spending all this money on these ads if he knew he didn't have a tough race in terms of the primary. So we'll see what's going to happen in 2014. What I'm predicting, though, is over the next 10, 20 years, once the number of independents exceed 50%, and that might take, like I said, 6 to 10 years minimum, but once it goes over 50%, you have a more and more likelihood, and hopefully grows beyond that, that one or more individuals is going to step forward and fund a new political party. And it's going to take that. It's going to take some people that are very, very wealthy, and that's just the first prerequisite, but second, willing to fund the establishment of a third party. I used to have a name for it, the American Citizens, what did I call it? The American Citizens Independence Party. That was the American Citizens, the abbreviation was ACAP, but I've sort of dropped that. You really need to keep the name short. Call it the Independent Party, because those are who will be the base of this third party. People that, frankly, are disgusted with the Republican Party and equally disgusted with the Democratic Party. On the Democrats, the people that are independents, or at least the ones I've talked to, they have seen their party move to the far left. To where they really say, well, yeah, you know, my parents were Democrats, my grandparents were Democrats, but if they were alive today, they wouldn't be Democrats, and neither am I, because they're so far to the left, they no longer represent me. I don't support what they're supporting. That's why you're seeing this drop. The principal reason, I think, today for the drop in the Democratic party affiliation is simple. It's Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, and it's Obama. It's both. And it's not a racist thing. It's just most people were happy with their group health insurance. And you're messing their affairs up. And it's resulted in higher unemployment, much higher premiums for the health insurance. And we just got started with this. And that's what I really need to remind. I was looking at the enrollment numbers. The goal was originally to have 7 million people enrolled by the end of March. They're not going to get there. They're not even going to get to the revised congressional budget estimate of 6 million. They're a little over 3 million today, but here's the problem. They're not disclosing, because I really don't think they know, how many of those 3 million that are so-called enrolled have actually paid. And that's the key thing. It's like applying for insurance but never paying the insurance premium. Well, after a week or two, the insurance company will say, your policy is terminated. You never went into effect. We never got your money. You don't have coverage. So they're under, as far, the best I can tell, they're under 3 million, and they're not going to get to 6 million by the end of March. And it looks like a little less than 25% are young people, and they need really in the mid to high 30s of young, when I say young people, people from 18 to 34 to enroll in the plan. I strongly suspect, and only insurance companies really know, most of the people that have enrolled and paid the premium probably have health problems. It's not just a pre-existing condition. They have a condition that's chronic. In other words, it's going to last them probably the rest of their life. And they absolutely need health insurance. And they're going to buy it no matter what, even if it's more expensive. You have what's called adverse selection. The people that truly need the coverage and will really be filing claims against the insurance company are the ones that applied and paid and made sure they have it, even if the premiums were 50 or 100% more, even if the deductible was 3, 4, 5 times their current deductible. And their point of view is, I really have no choice. I'm going to have to pay for it. And the impact of that is many people are going to be pressed, and they're going to cut their expenditures and a whole host of other things. And that's going to impact the economy. You better believe it's going to impact the economy. So I'm not very optimistic that the federal government will get anywhere near 7 million. I think they will be hard pressed to get 4 million truly paid in. And if that's the case, what's going to happen towards the end of next year is the rates are really going to go up quite a bit. And at that point, people that are getting subsidies are going to bail. You see, the group that they really need to get are young people, and they're not getting them. Because many of the young people are not paying attention. Many of them, the phrase is the young and the invincible. And their view is, hey, listen, I haven't been to the doctor for years, or if I've been to the doctor, you know, it's a couple of $100. I'm just not going to spend a lot of money. If they have a job and can afford it, they're not willing to spend the money. And if they don't have a job, they can't afford it and probably would qualify for Medicaid. And that's another thing I need to mention. A lot of the people that are now have coverage have it as they're under Medicaid, which is a welfare program for the poor to provide access to medical treatment. So I've been sort of jumping around today because there's no real major story, but what I do see happening, and I'll tie, if you've looked at the Drudge Report or other news, Washington is covered in snow today. And that's why they were trying to get out of Washington to their home states, assuming they could get back into their home states. They're getting out of town. It's a recess. They go on a recess. So many of our representatives and senators, they took the next plane out to points wherever. A few probably were trapped in D.C. Good for them. I hope they enjoy the snow. Slide down that Capitol Hill on a sled. But what's happened is Washington is covered not only in snow, but it's covered in debt, and more debt. And it's not getting any better. It's getting worse. You see, what really underneath it, it's like an iceberg. We hear about the debt ceiling. What you're not seeing is What's underwater, and what's underwater big time, are these unfunded liabilities of over $100 trillion. I've seen estimates as high as $130 trillion and growing. That's going to get worse, worse, and worse. Why? People are living longer. Every day, supposedly around 10,000 baby boomers are retiring, becoming eligible for Medicare and then Social Security. So that unfunded liability is going to get bigger and bigger. And that means the deficits will get bigger and bigger, and the national debt, the debt that's issued to pay the bills, will get bigger and bigger. And there's no or very little effort by the leadership of both parties to solve this problem. And that is the opportunity for a third party at some point in time in the not too distant future to say, vote for us, we're different. We believe in constitutional government. We believe in fiscal responsibility. See, my vision for this party is, it won't be a personality. We're not talking getting someone elected for president. It's a party will have a long-term view. And what I mean by that, they'll run people in every state, every congressional district, every Senate that's open, and locally for governors and the offices. It will be truly a political party. Now, they're not going to be able to do that, obviously, starting in all 50 states. They probably will take 15 to 20 states and build and build and build and then spread out from there. But what they're trying to do is build up their numbers in the House and in the Senate and eventually the presidency, because they understand it's no good to elect a third party candidate if after, and assuming they're successful, and that's very difficult because you got to get on the ballot. You see, the Democrats and the Republicans, it's like Coke and Pepsi. They try to exclude other players. Now, there are many other third parties, and that's something most people are not aware of. And most of them get less than 1%, don't even come close to 1% of the vote. I don't want any part of that. What I do want a part of and would vote for is a party that lays it out, clearly spells out what they're for, what their principles are for, and what is their agenda in terms of major issues, such as illegal immigration, such as balancing the budget, such as bailouts, such as pro-life. It's not going to go after everyone. Once the independents are at 50%. That's a majority. Do they have to get a majority to win the election? No, they don't. Let's assume the other party is split down the middle. It's 25-25. The independents should win if they have a decent candidate. So what's going to have to happen is and you need to build this party. It's very much a building effort. Recruit people. You need candidates, but you need the people that go with the candidates. You obviously need money. You need organization. You need a good message, a clear message that distinguishes yourself from other parties. Now, after saying this, because I listen to a lot of talk radio, and I think it's fair to say most people would characterize most of talk radio, the people that are hosts or presenters of a show, would at least say whether they're not, whether they truly are or something else, that they are conservative. A few will say they're libertarian. I'm a libertarian, but I equally say I'm a conservative to the extent that the principles are conservative principles, and one of the key ones is fiscal responsibility, and I'm just not seeing it. You know, that is the one issue where I said enough is enough. I know when I'm being lied to. I know when I'm being played or jerked around, however you want to describe it, and I said no. They don't deserve my vote. And if they can't find a candidate, a strong conservative and or preferably libertarian, I much prefer the term classical liberal, then I'm not going to vote for them. I'm not going to vote for another progressive Republican. I don't care who they are. And I don't care if they're better than Obama. That's not the point. You see, because this is a point that you need to understand. The only thing that gets these people's attention, the ruling elite, the politicians in Washington attention, is if you vote them out of office, or you're not going to vote for them, or you're going to stay home. You see, Romney could be president today had he just gotten the same number of Republicans out that McCain did. And I didn't particularly care for Romney, and I certainly didn't care at all for McCain. But today in the White House, Mitt Romney could have been president had the conservatives come out and the libertarians come out. They stayed home. Now, Republicans will say, well, look what you got. My answer is this. As long as you're going to stick it to me with progressive candidates, moderate Republicans, I'm not going to vote for you. I'll stay home. In other words, a plague on both houses. And that gets to the nub of the issue, because they think they have your vote. Just like the Democratic Party believes, and I think they're correct, that they have the black vote and the Hispanic vote, the majority. Listen, when roughly 95% of all blacks that voted for Obama, the Democratic Party, I think, is correct in saying we can count on the black vote. And when more than two-thirds of the Hispanic vote votes for, and it's higher than that, votes for the Democratic Party, I think it's fair to say that the Hispanic vote is going to vote for them. Yeah, they'll make the right sounds and say the right words, but they more or less assume they're going to get the vote. I don't think it's smart, then, to give them your vote unless they really produce what you need. And where I'm going with this is this. Unemployment has been above 6.5% for 63 months, for the last 63 months. Of those 63 months, it's been above 8% 43 months. Who has been the people most impacted on that? I'll tell you, blacks and Hispanics, especially young and low-skilled people that would do manual labor. They can't find jobs because many of those jobs are being performed today by, guess who, illegal aliens. Yet, what is the Democratic Party advocating? Amnesty, or a pathway to citizenship for all those illegals. That will in turn mean more illegals will come in. You see, the Democratic Party, its leadership, assumes the blacks and Hispanics will continue voting for them. Yet who is the ones that are getting the shaft here? It's the blacks and the Hispanics. And I also will say this, the American worker. And that's why many Democrats are leaving the Democratic Party. And I don't think it's too long. It might take another 20 years that finally the blacks and Hispanics wake up to the fact that they've been taken advantage of. And they have. Because they are the people that their own children can't find jobs. Or if they can find a job, it's part-time. Yeah, they might get subsidies. You know, if you want to be on welfare, you know, I say this. If you want to be on welfare your entire life, vote for the Democratic Party. That's where they're at. You see, the major reform I would insist on, as well as other people, is I'm not against welfare for the truly needy. But I think you need to have strict limits on how long you can be on welfare if you're not truly needy. Everyone is going to lose their job. People are going to be down and out on their luck. But you don't turn the so-called safety net into a hammock. And you don't want people year after year, generation and generation after generation, for most of their lives being on welfare. They need to be independent. They need to be self-reliant. They need to have a good paying job. And you're not seeing that with the economic policies pursued by the Democratic Party. I'm looking at the time. I need to get off the air, but I wanted to bring that home, that over time you're going to see not only independents becoming majority in terms of party affiliation, namely they're not affiliated with either the Democrats or Republicans. But I really truly believe that within the next 10 to 20 years, you will see the establishment and growth and success of a third party that is truly principled and truly different, fundamentally different from both the Democratic and the Republican Party, because they will believe in the Constitution and not just talk the talk, walk the walk. In other words, one of the key things is balance the budget, but also obey the law and really support the rule of law. With that said, you are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We're the voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of anyone at KDUX, Richland College, or the DCCD. Thank you for listening, and now back to the music.